Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo and I have with me Dawn.
Hello.
And it's a pleasure to welcome to VI Talk for the first time Judith Potts from Esme's Umbrella. Hiya Judith.
Hello, thank you much for inviting me.
You're welcome, it's lovely to speak to you. So first of all, Esme's Umbrella is support and information service, I suppose you would say, for Charles-Bonnet syndrome. So do you want to tell us a little bit about Esme's Umbrella first?
Absolutely. Well, Esme's Umbrella is named after my late mum because she was in her early 90s and she had glaucoma, but she lived a very independent life. Her sight was obviously much worse than we had realised, or that she was prepared to tell us. And I think she was probably compensating a bit as well. And I did notice that her confidence was going. She was an incredibly independent woman. But one day she said to me, "I do wish those people would get off my sofa." And of course, there was no one on her sofa. And before I could say anything, she said, "And also there's a child that follows me everywhere and a gargoyle-like creature that jumps from table to chair. And sometimes the whole place morphs into a totally different place." Well, as you can imagine, I was totally shocked. And I thought, well, what on earth can be wrong? But then I thought, well, it surely she hasn't got dementia. I mean, she was very good at doing the Telegraph cryptic crossword every day and managing on her own, and I had no idea what could be wrong with her. Well, obviously I told her there was nothing there and that she shouldn't worry about it, but she did say this had been going on for quite some months. But she obviously didn't tell me because she thought, as I did, the word dementia would be brought into it. So I went home and I thought, what am I going to do? And with the most enormous piece of luck, that very day, buried in the health pages of a newspaper, I found a tiny paragraph about a condition which was caused by loss of sight. And it could have been written by Esme. And I thought, brilliant. Now I know Charles-Bonnet syndrome. Okay, I will ring her ophthalmologist, which I did. Unfortunately, and very shockingly, he refused point blank to discuss Charles-Bonnet syndrome. He wouldn't tell me why he'd never given us any warning. And in fact, he was so hostile that on her next appointment, he sent his junior with strict instructions not to discuss the condition.
Wow.
So I then went to her GP. She'd never heard of it and said, "No, I don't think that exists." Then I went to her optometrist, who also said, "I've never heard of anything like this." So I did what we're always told never to do. I consulted the internet, on which I found Dr. Dominic Fitch at King's London. And at the time, I was writing a health column for the Telegraph. So I called him and said, "Can I come and interview you because I want to write about this condition?" And I did. And I told him about Esme. And he confirmed that this is what she had. He explained it to me, and I began to write. And every time I wrote about CBS, my inbox was full of emails from people who were either relieved to discover that it wasn't a mental health issue, or who wanted to know more information, and who wanted a doctor and medication. And of course, there's neither. So after my mum died, I realised that I absolutely should do something about this and try and raise some awareness. But you know what it's like, you don't. And then I got an email from a professor at a university in New York. And she told me that her mother, much against the will of the family, but on the advice of the doctor, had been admitted to a dementia unit because she was hallucinating. While she was in the unit, she simply could not get past what she perceived to be writhing worms and slugs on her food and in her drink. And so she stopped eating and drinking and died. Now that was the final straw for me. And I thought, we can't have this. We just cannot have this. This is awful. And mm-hmm. the professor said to me she would never forgive herself. So in, 2015, at the House of Commons, I launched Esme's Umbrella using my mum's name. And since then, I have worked really hard to raise awareness of the condition and to source funding for research. And yeah, so that's how it all started.
And it is just you, isn't it? It's just you and yourself.
It's just me.
Wow. Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
It's really hard to believe that it's only 2015 that it, you know, that you that people actually started to sit up and take notice, isn't it? That people were struggling so much.
Yes. I mean, Dr. Dominic Fitch had started some research in the late 1990s. And this was in visual hallucinations, in Parkinson's, in Lewy body dementia, and in Charles Bonnet syndrome. And so he was steadily working, but obviously no one was raising his profile or raising awareness. And I think I was just so shocked, and I still am shocked, that people are living with this condition with no support. And I don't mean you're not supporting them. I mean, there's no doctor out there. And we are relying on ECLOs and Rovies to offer some form of support. But we don't really have a proper form of support.
No.
So we've spoken about Esme's Umbrella, and for those, I know a lot of people do know what Charles Bonnet syndrome is, but for anybody who doesn't or is confused by what we're talking about, do you want to just explain what it is exactly and, you know, to, as far as we know, what sort of causes it?
Absolutely. Okay, well, Charles Bonnet syndrome occurs in a person of any age, and children are not exempt. It happens when the person has lost over 60% of sight. Now, this loss can have been caused by any one of the many, many, many eye diseases, by cancer, accident, stroke, diabetes, or another condition which damages the optic nerve. It causes vivid, silent visual hallucinations, which range from disturbing to terrifying. It's very important to know that it is not a mental health issue. It is caused entirely by lack of sight. So as sight diminishes or is completely lost, the messages from the retina in the eye to the visual cortex in the brain, which go all the time to and fro, they are reduced in number or they stop entirely. But for some reason we don't yet understand, the brain does not stop. The brain fires up and creates its own images. Now, what is seen depends on which part of the brain is firing at that moment. So if it's the part that interprets color or pattern, then that's what you see. If it's animals or people, then that's what you see. And people report all kinds of images, from very basic ones, as I say, like color, patterns, words, musical notes, maps. And they tend to be incredibly irritating because they cover everything in the room. So even if you have a little bit of sight left, and you can watch television or read a book, you can't, because these patterns are everywhere. Other people see animals. They see people. Now, people tend to be dressed, for some reason we have no idea why, in costume of some kind. So military, medieval, that sort of thing. Sometimes the people are tiny. They're like little Lilliputian-sized people. They often come in families. Otherwise, people see fire, which is very frightening, water, which is equally frightening, pouring down from the ceiling. Calls are made quite often to the fire brigade, to the police. which is very disturbing for all concerned, because of course they arrive and there's nothing there. Sometimes, and this can be really terrifying, the room or the garden will morph into a totally alien place. So one lady told me she found herself sitting in a candlelit medieval cathedral and she was the only person there.
Gosh, oh, bless her.
Now, there is a bit of medication, but the problem with it is that it has terrible side effects. It's the medication that it can be used for dementia and can be used for epilepsy, but it's not recommended and it could never be used for children and it can't be used for the very old, so that really doesn't work. I have coping strategies on my website, which I have collected from people who've sent them to me, telling me what they do to try and disperse the hallucinations. And just recently, and I have no idea if it's anything to do with COVID-19, but people tell me by eating ginger, so ginger biscuits or crystallized ginger, or even drinking ginger ale is helping. Now, ginger has medicinal properties, so who knows? It's worth a try. Anything is worth a try.
Definitely. That's fascinating. So if we move on to COVID-19, which obviously people are in lockdown and very stressed and anxious, how is that affecting people with CBS?
Well, as we know so little about CBS, but we do know two things. We know, one, that there are at least a million people in the UK who live with CBS, and two, that isolation, stress and fever, so having a temperature, will exacerbate the hallucinations. The other thing which I think is worth mentioning before I forget is that some medication will produce hallucinations, and it is worth checking the side effects of, and I mean medication for another condition, for maybe diabetes or whatever it might be. It's worth having the GP check, because occasionally medication taken for something completely different does make the hallucinations worse.
Indeed,
I believe there are some eye drops, the name of which escapes me at this moment, as well, which can cause hallucinations. So because so many people are in isolation with fear, because we all, every single one of us at this moment, is very anxious. We don't know what's going to happen to us. We don't know when we're going to be back to any form of normal. And I think the anxiety in itself is definitely producing probably more frightening images too. I have heard from people who tell me that their once benign images are now turning to something much more sinister. And the only thing I can suggest is trying relaxation exercises, which, if I can ever talk to the chap that looks after my website again, he seems to have disappeared, I am going to put some relaxation exercises onto the website. Because although we also know that CBS can occur when you are in a very quiet situation, so if you're the passenger in a car, and you're not having to concentrate, you will very often start to hallucinate and you'll see buildings coming rushing at you and huge giant tractors and that sort of thing. But I think in this particular instance, we probably need some relaxation exercises for people who are finding CBS really, really difficult to tolerate.
That's a really good idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meditation and relaxation. Yeah.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your website and what people can find the information from there?
My website carries information and explanation, really, of Charles Bonnet syndrome. It carries details about Dr. Dominic Fitch and myself. it carries the coping strategies that I discussed, which are really, you have to kind of try and shunt your brain into another gear to switch off the cells that are firing. So clapping your hands, kicking your fingers, standing up if you're sitting down, that kind of thing, maybe putting some music on or turning some music off, anything that just moves you around a bit, even if it's not physical, even if it's just in your mind. So it carries all of that. And I will be, at some point this year, if I can find some funding, I'm going to relaunch the website. November is 5 years since I started this work, so I think that might be a good time, and I'm rather hoping that we will be back to a reasonable amount of normality by then. Mm-hmm. And I will be doing an event somewhere to mark the occasion. And I think there'll be a lot more on the website then, and it will be much more interactive. My problem is that I have no funding, so I have to rely on very kind people to do these things for me.
So you have a helpline as well, don't you? Which is now, you did run that yourself, but obviously just being you, that's become very busy, hasn't it?
It has become very busy, and the iHealth team at the RNIB have taken it over for me, and they are brilliant. They will send any information plus the coping strategies which they have for me through the post if people call. Now, the number is different to the regular RNIB number. It is 0207 391 3299.
Right, for anybody listening, we'll put that information in the description with the interview so that people don't have to remember it. So
that would be absolutely lovely. And I would just say also that if the caller wants to speak to me particularly, the RNIB call me and tell me, and I then ring the person back. I'm very happy to do that, absolutely. If they would like to talk to someone who lives with Charles Bonnet syndrome, there are a couple of people on the Retina UK's helpline to whom we can refer to them. So that is good. The other thing is that the Macular Society offers a group telephone counselling service for people who live with Charles Bonnet syndrome. Now, for this particular service from the Macular Society, you don't have to have a macular condition. Anybody with Charles Bonnet syndrome can ring. And what you do is you ring 0300 30 30 111 and just ask to join.
Right.
Now, I know group telephone counselling isn't for everybody, but I do know that Suzanne, who runs it, has had huge success with this. Mm. And I would recommend, if people feel that's for them, go for it.
And sometimes just talking to somebody who's experiencing it can make you just feel like you're not alone, can't it? Just, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What advice would you give somebody who's living on their own? Obviously, services have been cut, such as rehabs and ECLOs. What advice would you give somebody who's living on their own at the moment experiencing it?
Well, I think I would ring my helpline at the RNIB.
Yeah.
They will talk to you. Mm-hmm. And then they'll pass them on to me if they want to talk to me. I think I would try the Macular Society's telephone counselling, group telephone counselling service too. I don't know what else. I wish there were 100 things I could suggest, but there aren't. I mean, one of the things we will be doing in the future is to set up some research projects to find out what we can do in the way of support, what people would like us to do and how we can do it, because it's such a very specialized area that I don't want to just you know, guess without actually consulting people.
Yes.
I did discover that I was a stakeholder in the new Moorfields Hospital, which is planned in London. And they called me and asked me whether I felt that people with Charles-Bonnet syndrome were being treated unfairly. And I said, yes, I do think that. They are not only being treated unfairly, they're being discriminated against because there are no specialist nurses.
Mm.
Yeah. And there's no hospital hub just for Charles-Bonnet syndrome. Mm. So they have promised me faithfully that once the hospital is built, this will be remedied. I know that Moorfields and also the Manchester Eye Hospital are looking at finding funding for specialist nurses, but I fear this is way down their list now.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Such a shame.
It is. It is a great, great shame. I'm hoping that the research which we have put in place will come to fruition at some point. We are expecting, we have done 2 years of a research project at Newcastle University. A lovely lady called Kat De Silva Morgan has been basically, you can tell I'm not a doctor, comparing the brains of people with CBS against those with sight loss who don't develop it. And if we can establish the difference, that will be very, very helpful. Now, yeah. I don't know whether how far they've got. I don't know whether they have established a difference. But we will, I hope, perhaps May or June time, the result of that will come out. They've also been testing, I think it's called deep cranial stimulation, which is a way of switching the cells off. And if that works, that will be good too.
Mm.
From now, I have sourced funding, partly from, actually from Esme's umbrella. I have a restricted fund under the auspices of Fight for Sight. And people are very kind and put money into this fund, which can only be used for research into CBS. And blind veterans have matched the amount I have found. So we have a researcher starting soon. I can't announce exactly who yet. There is also another piece of research which has been funded by Fight for Sight and the Welsh Government. And that will be done at Cardiff University. So that's very good. I sourced from the Thomas Pocklington Trust £15,000 for a research project to establish prevalence of CBS in children. So all the paediatric ophthalmology clinics will be surveyed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something else will be added on to that as well. So we'll hear from patients too. And the last piece, which I think is really exciting, but I think we'll have to wait a bit now, is the medical detection dogs. Now, these dogs you probably know about at the moment because they are going to be sniffing COVID-19.
Yeah, right.
Well, there is a lovely young man called Dr. Amit Patel, who was a trauma doctor at University College Hospital in London until he had a hemorrhage behind his eyes and lost his sight overnight.
Mm-hmm.
His guide dog, Kika, has begun to warn him before his hallucinations appear.
Oh, that's interesting.
There is also another chap that we have discovered whose guide dog is doing the same. Now, Amit's hallucination, the one in particular, is really horrible. It's of a girl dressed in white with mud and blood pouring from her face.
Mm-hmm.
He sees this 4 or 5 times a day, and he has never managed to come to terms with it. And he's a young man. He has 2 small children. It's not age that's causing him not to be able to come to terms with it. It is just horrific.
Mm.
But Kika, the dog, now goes and puts her head on his lap before it happens.
Wow.
She seems to know when it's gone, and she moves away. So I used to write a lot about these sniffing dogs because they sniffed a lot of cancer.
Yeah.
And so I called Dr. Claire Guest, who runs the charity, and I told her about Kika. And I said, do you think this is possible? And she said, entirely possible. Something changes in the body before a hallucination appears. And if the dogs can identify what it is, and we can feed that into some other research, who knows what we might find.
Mm.
So there were, of course, they were immediately going to do this for me, and they were going to cover the cost. But I think that probably will have to wait a bit now.
Yeah, that's exciting, though.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
It's brilliant, and I just love the thought of it.
Yeah, very comforting as well, isn't it? You know, if you're going through something traumatic, having your assistance dog, you know, we're both guide dog owners, so the thought of that is really lovely.
Yes.
Watch this space, as I say.
Yes. Yeah,
definitely. Keep us posted. That'd be great.
Judith, do you want to give us your web address?
I do. Okay. It is www.charles, which is Charles, Bonnet, which is Bonnet, syndrome.uk. There's no co, it's just .uk. So it's www.charlesbonnetsyndrome.uk. I mean, the thing is that Charles Bonnet was Swiss, Genevan, and so I always pronounce it as he would have done.
Yeah.
He actually, March of this year was 300 years since his birth. So you can imagine he documented what happened to his grandfather, and he realized it was to do with the sight. But nobody until the 1990s did anything else about it.
Mm-hmm. That's very scary.
It is scary. It is scary. So we all have to gather together now and nag, but we can't really nag the NHS at this precise moment. So we're going to have to wait a bit to nag.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've definitely got two supporters here.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very grateful.
Thank you ever so much for talking to us, Judith. It's been really fascinating, and it's great to hear what research is in the pipeline, if, you know, not being done now, but, you know, that will happen in the future.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.